overwhelmingly crazy, just the regular crazy. So that's a good thing. Get to go into the weekend with things pretty good, relatively good. Actually, I had a picture that I was going to give to Joe, and I didn't do it, Joe, but it's okay. I was going to use the full breadth of our technology, but for the moment, we'll just stick with it this way. If you go to the Post-Dispatch today, you can find a great front page article, and it says that families are coming from South America to the United States, and they're getting help from organizations within the United States to come in here legally and to get set up and to find solutions to their problems and find ways to get jobs and so forth. And it's a great front page article. Read it, I hope. Really, all you do is go to the Post and pick it up online or however you want to do it. But it's there. It's very interesting. And the International Institute of St. Louis is highlighted in this article. And again, I didn't do all my work today because I was really going to reach out to them. And, I might have done that and still been waiting till next week to talk to somebody. But in any case, I do want to say that the people on the front page were from Venezuela. Venezuela is considered to be one of the most dangerous and difficult places where people come from. At least that's the story that's told. Now, this anecdote, which, in research, we understand that anecdotal information is not evidence that allows us to generalize into, some great idea. But in fact, this is a family from Venezuela. It's come to the United States, and with the help of the International Institute of St. Louis, they have gotten settled here, and they're having a really great life. Certainly much better than anything they imagined before when they were living in Venezuela. They left Venezuela and walked here. Listen to what I said. These people walked from Venezuela to the United States. Now, I don't think I would even take that on for a good story. I don't think I would even try that if somebody told me that at the end of the walk, I could interview Donald Trump in jail. I don't think I'd walk from Venezuela to the United States. But this family did. Obviously, they were highly motivated. And I just thought that that was really a great example of the other side of the story that Donald likes to tell, which is that these people are all from some kind of crazy gang, what MI-13, whatever they call it. Bad people from South America coming to the United States. And according to Donald, that's all the people coming here. And then there are a couple of nice ones, but most of them are what Donald says, according to him. And I just thought it was important to see what one of these families looks like and read the story. You'll get a lot of information about them and the International Institute. And I promise, get on with these people next week and see if we can get them on the air and have them talk about maybe some of the other situations that they've come into contact with and how outstanding this entire immigration piece has really been for the United States in so many ways that are unreported. So we really need to follow up on that. One thing that happened this afternoon that is sort of breaking news is that Joe Biden has refused to allow certain weapons to go to Israel, and that's not just a general decision. That was some weaponry that was on its way right now. Joe Biden got his hands on it, stopped it, and those weapons are not going. And I understand that there are a lot of people who are upset, certainly in the Republican Party. Oh, wait, the Republican Party, they're upset? Wait a second. Why are they upset? They sat on the bill for almost 3 months and prevented these weapons from going to either Israel, Ukraine, or Taiwan. So, wait a second. Why would they be upset about this? Why would they be jumping all over Joe Biden when they're the ones who held up this weaponry, like I said, for months? I'm just not sure. I know what they're saying. They're saying that this is horrific behavior, that Joe Biden is just one of the worst people on the planet. How could he deprive Israel of this important weaponry? And by the way, the munitions that were going over there in this case happen to be 200-pound bombs that would have been potentially dropped on Rafah. And Biden has already told Netanyahu, we're not going to support bombing Rafah. Now, they're sending everything over from the Iron Dome and all the defensive weapons for Israel. Everything to protect Israeli soil is going over there. It's just that these weapons that they were going to use to just destroy Rafah, that's not going. And it's not that Joe Biden is saying, listen, we really want to protect Rafah. That's not it. Biden has said, we want you to root out Hamas, but do it in a very carefully identified way, one where you really figure out how you're going to do this and then go in and target the people who you want and get them. Now, it's true that Hamas is using these people in Gaza as shields against Israeli attacks. And listen, nobody wants the innocent people in Gaza to be killed. And I know there are people who hate Israel for lots of reasons. And I'm going to say Israel does not want to kill the innocent people. Certainly, large numbers of people in Israel do not want these people killed. They really don't. There's no love lost between the two sides. That's a fact. But they don't want in Israel to destroy innocent children, mothers, families. Now, I understand that Hamas came over and did exactly that to the Israelis. Chopped off babies' heads, raped their mothers, then shot their mothers in the head, and then walked off with 250 hostages. I understand. And I understand being furious to the point of wanting to blow up everything that you see, because anybody who had that done to their families would respond with that kind of anger. Now, over the years, when Israel has gotten in these wars with Arabs, Palestinians, the United States has always said, take it easy, don't go crazy, get the people you have to get, but just don't go berserk. And Israel has, over years, held back pretty well. The problem is, in this case, it was truly the largest number of Israelis and some people from other countries, including the United States, who were killed and tortured. I mean, this wasn't just dropping bombs on Israel and having people die. It wasn't a suicide attack where a bomb blew up and just a lot of people were killed. This was much more than that. This was one by one cutting off babies' heads, raping their mothers, and then shooting the mothers in the head and filming these things. I mean, they wanted to make sure that they got full credit for all this torture. So I think it is understandable that the Israelis would like to see real retribution. They want to see it. Now, remember this, though. There are hostages over there, maybe 100 left. And the Israelis, many of the people, want the hostages back. So a large number of people in Israel are saying, look, knock it off. Leave Rafah alone. Make a deal. Get those people back. If there's anybody over there that's still alive, bring them back into Israel before we figure out the next thing that we want to do. So they're conflicting people here. There's some groups that want to do one thing, you know, go in and murder everybody you see. And then there are others who don't even want to kill Hamas right now. They just want the people back. So this is complicated. And it's further complicated by this. I was talking to a friend of mine the other day, and this is a friend who is strongly pro-Palestine. And he's an Arab. No, not an Arab. He's a Muslim. So he's a Muslim. He is pro-Palestinian. And he feels that not only has Israel done things over the years to the Palestinians that are very wrong, including what's happening now, which many consider to be genocide. But on top of that, he's even going back to the point of saying, look, in 1948, when the Israelis came into this area, they took land that belonged to Palestinians. They took their homes. They took their homes. They took everything they had. They shoved them out, and they established Israel. Now, of course, they didn't do it by themselves. They did it with the support of Great Britain. And by the way, when Great Britain even did this, they really weren't for this being done on the day that it started in 1948. The Israelis sort of took control of their own destiny and said, okay, you've told us this is our place. This is what we're going to do. You're going to support it. And guess what? We're going. We're taking our territory, and we're doing it now. But even then, and I've got the video, back in 1948 and 49, there were people on the Palestinian side who believed that there was a solution between the two groups, that there was a way that both sides could live together and work together, and that life would be very positive coming out of the decision for the Jews in Europe to go and take their place in Israel, which, again, they were refugees. They had left Hitler's murder, and they came from all the murderous terror in Europe to the Middle East looking for a place to just lay down and rest. Now, like I say, the videos that I have, and you can see them. I mean, these were made at the time. These weren't doctored by anybody. They showed Palestinians and Israelis talking to each other in a very nice way and trying to develop plans that would move things ahead in a very positive way. unfortunately, and I can't tell you why or how, I wasn't even born, and I just don't know. But I've read, and I still don't quite understand how both sides managed to blow this whole thing up. And they certainly did. And I have no doubt from everything I've read that it was both sides that did it. The Palestinians, many of them were angry over the land, and the Israelis were angry over the response that they were starting to get from some of these, I was going to say extreme, but I don't want to say that, because let me say angry, because they were angry. And because extreme, I don't know. I mean, maybe they had a point. They didn't want to give up their land. On the other hand, there were attempts on both sides to develop solutions that would allow all of these people to get together and live there. Now, as time went on, there's no doubt Israel became a booming country. And I say country, but trust me, go to the map. Israel is so tiny, it is hardly existent. You can barely see it without a magnifying glass. Israel is tiny, it is small, but it is extremely powerful. The people there are well-educated, which they came from Europe with great educations. And once they got there, the United States stepped up and gave all kinds of money for everything. Weapons, places for people to live, developing technology, supporting the university, everything, you name it. The people of Israel got tremendous support from the United States, much as the United States at the exact same time was providing support for Japan and Germany. So this wasn't just, you know, one place where we did this. We were doing it all over the world. And somebody could say, as I've brought up before, well, you gave billions of dollars to Germans. Those are the people who hired Hitler. And you gave them billions? And you left us out? Are you kidding us? I'm sure there was a lot of that going on. But, and I can't give you the details on this, but from the beginning, problems developed between the Israelis and the Palestinians, which kept the United States on the Israeli side and not helping the Palestinians. Because honestly, the United States was in the mood for spreading money all over the world. And frankly, we're still there. And we got a lot of people right now, of course, you know, the MAGA nuts, and I will call them nuts and extreme and dangerous, anti-democracy, everything. They're terrible people. And they're very similar in some ways to the crazies who did support Hitler in World War II. I mean, there were many of those. Charles Lindbergh is most famous for this. Originally isolationist, but as the story developed, I mean, Lindbergh was supporting Hitler, and other people were in the United States as well. So, you know, they're weird kinds of situations that exist. From time to time, people end up on one side, and you can't even understand how they got there. But certainly, all of this, in one fashion or another, has worked against the Palestinians. And so here they are, sitting in the middle of the Gaza Strip with nothing. And believe me, they have nothing. They, even before all this mess, October 7th, before that, they had nothing. They had a miserable life, nothing but struggle, angry with Israel, angry over the fact that Israel was sort of fencing them in order to keep them out of Israel. Now, for a reason, of course. I mean, the reason is because the Palestinians for years had come into Israel and blown everything up. They'd come in with bombs tied to them, and they'd blow themselves up and everything in sight, anybody they could get. They'd come in with a smile on their face, a bomb around their waist, and boom, you're dead. So lots of problems here, and it took many decades, generations, to build up to all of this. I know people say, well, this went back 3,000 years. Well, there's some animosity that was back 3,000 years, but that's still not the modern era. And in the modern era, this has been a 1948 problem that has grown into what we're looking at today. So anyway, you've got all these people in the Middle East, certainly in Gaza, very poor, very unhappy, very uneducated. And they've got this Hamas group, which sort of plays to their hatreds that have developed in Gaza. And also, while they're playing to these hatreds, they're also doing one other thing, which is they're using the Palestinians as shields when they go to Israel and cause chaos. Now, I don't know how often the story I'm about to tell has been told here in the United States, but I know I've heard the story many times. So how many times you've heard it, I can't tell you. But I know this. Netanyahu was supporting Hamas through Qatar. And this is a fact. Nobody's even denying it. The money was coming from Qatar to Hamas. And in fact, some time ago, Qatar went to Netanyahu and said, "Are you sure you want us to keep this up?" And Netanyahu said, "Yes, continue to fund Hamas." Now, no question, Netanyahu had a plan, but the problem is the plan didn't work. He thought that he could control Hamas, and he was dreaming. He couldn't. But the story's worse, because the Israelis got a hold of a document that described exactly what was coming on October 7th. The precise plan for how they were going to cross through the gates and the wire and everything else, and they were going to come and kill a bunch of Israelis and take hostages. So it was all known. This was understood by the Israeli government. And Netanyahu didn't believe it. He said, "We can control all of this, so don't worry, no problem." Well, it turned out it was a problem, and it turned out that all the information that Israel had was correct. They were coming, and they did. And then we know what the results were. We know about the children and the women and the hostages. So we know it all. But be assured that there's no clean hands over on the Israeli side, where money was being funneled to Hamas through Qatar, and then also the actual plan wasn't even being protected for. Nobody was doing anything to try to do just some attempt to cut down the potential for damage just in case Hamas did this. The story out of Israel was Hamas was so backward that they could never accomplish this, that this was way too difficult. So don't even worry about it. Nothing to even say here. We've got this covered. Well, they didn't have it covered. And not only did they not have it covered, but then when it did occur, a lot of people are asking the following question. Why did it take 6, 7, 8, 10 hours for the Israeli Defense Forces to show up in parts of the area where the attack was ongoing. There were Israelis and others who were being murdered on the kibbutz where they came in through for hours, waiting for the forces to come and defend them. Now, no one's given an answer for this. And I've heard the Israeli ambassador interviewed, and he couldn't give an answer. And his answer was, we're going to look into this once we've done what we have to do in retaliation for what was done to us. And okay, you could even understand that position, because you could say, look, it's already been done, and whatever Israel messed up, you can't go back and stop that. It's already happened. So let's deal with it, and then we'll go back and figure out who's accountable, which is absolutely going to be Netanyahu, and then, of course, others who are with Netanyahu. So that's pretty obvious. And just what I've laid out for you here, it's pretty bad. It's pretty damning of Israel. They could have prevented so much of this if they had simply jumped up, cut off the money from Qatar to Hamas, and then put the forces all over the border with Gaza to make sure that they weren't coming across. They didn't do it. So, with all of that in mind, it's still not okay that that Hamas came and did it. I mean, that's not all right. And it's also not okay that people are telling Israel, you can't defend yourselves because you know that Hamas is saying, and we all have heard it, Hamas has said, when this is all over, when everything quiets down, we're going to come back and we're going to do this all over again. It's sort of like with Donald Trump. He tells you what he's going to do, and then you sit here and don't listen to him. And that's what's going on in the Middle East. That's what's going on with Israel and Palestine. The Israelis are saying, okay, Hamas is telling us they're coming back, so forget all that money to Hamas and forget whatever else we were doing. Now we are going to annihilate everybody that's part of that organization. And how do you do it when that organization is using innocent Palestinians as shields? So one answer is you would have to do it very cautiously. You would have to really identify the areas where you want to go in and do whatever it is you want to do, that whatever you want to destroy. Go in and do it, and then go back out and come back again. It's a long process, but in order to save the lives of over 34,000 Palestinians, because that's how many have died so far, at least, maybe more. But in order to save those lives, you're going to have to do this very cautiously. Of course, the Israeli response has been, we're not being cautious anymore. We've had enough. These people came across and did these horrific things. We're coming after them with everything we've got, and we're going to make them pay. We can understand it, but at this point, we've probably gone too far with the understanding, because we've allowed 34,000 people to die innocently, and we have prevented all of the materials from going in, the humanitarian materials that they need desperately. And so, you know, that's happened too. And the United States under Joe Biden, too late to be sure, is now saying we're going to step up and we're going to do some things. They built a harbor over in this area around Palestine so that the materials can get in through this door that they've opened where they've got this little harbor set up. And frankly, I mean, the United States is trying to do something to stop the killing now. The United States is going back and forth between the Middle East, trying to make deals in order to get a ceasefire so that those hostages that are still there can be sent back to Israel. So all of this is being worked on by the United States at the moment. And one of the things that it has certainly been talked about is that the United States would like to see Palestine recognized as a state. That Joe Biden has been looking at a way to get support around the Middle East to support Palestine being established as a state, an independent state. Now, of course, that would make Israel crazy. And it would partly be because some people would say you are rewarding them for blowing up all of these people on this kibbutz and then taking these hostages. But it's even so much more complicated than that, because, again, this story has been told widely in recent days, and that is going back to Bill Clinton. A deal had been made to give Palestine virtually everything they wanted. Some people say 97%, some people say 98%, but they got almost every last thing they wanted. And Yasser Arafat said, no, we won't take it. So that's on them. Understandably, Arafat refused to take it and wouldn't go through with the deal because he believed, probably accurately, he believed that he would be murdered by Palestinians if he agreed to what they were being offered. Not that it wasn't a good deal, but that there are some Palestinians who are only interested in one thing: the river to the sea. Wipe them all out. Kill the Jews. Okay, I get it. They're not going to do that, you know. I mean, Israel is extremely powerful because of the United States, and there is no way that anybody is going to wipe out Israel. And even if China or Russia said, let's just nuke them. See, they couldn't even do that because Israel has 100, roughly, nuclear weapons. So Israel's one of the 9 nuclear states in the world, and you just can't mess with them. Their existence is secure beyond belief, and especially with what the United States has done to help them to build this Iron Dome, which is phenomenal when it comes to blowing things out of the sky that are being dropped on Israeli heads. Now, of course, nobody wants things dropped on their head. You know, if Mexico were dropping bombs on California and saying they wanted California back, and we had the technology to shoot everything down, I guarantee you, California wouldn't go for it. California would say, let's go kill these guys because you may be good at shooting down their rockets, but we don't want to sit here and take the chance that maybe you'll miss. So, yeah, Israel is the same. Anybody would be the same. And so you've got a lot of things, again, going on at the same time. But understand this. The United States could join with the rest of the world and with the other Arab states, and they could make a deal to create a Palestinian state. Now, you may have heard, and hopefully you did, but you're going to hear it now, that today there was an attempt to set Palestine up as a member of the United Nations. I don't think it was a completely full membership, but it was pretty close. And the United States vetoed it. So you know that tonight and tomorrow and every day from here on, you're going to have people screaming that the United States is working against the interests of the Palestinians, that they wouldn't even allow Palestine to become the 194th member of the United Nations, although they do have some rights over at the United Nations right now, but it's not as a state. Anyway, that's out there today. We vetoed it for Israel. But were we doing anybody a favor in that? I can't tell you. Because the other thing I don't know, and none of us do, is if Israel is working with the United States, and maybe they're not, but maybe it's the United States alone. But if the United States is working alone with some of the Arab countries to recognize Palestine, well, maybe that's why they vetoed what they did today, because they've got another plan, another direction that they want to go in order to establish a Palestinian state. Because the United States government has made it very clear they must establish a Palestinian state over there, or else Israel will never have peace. And I can tell you, I talked with my friend the other day, and I mentioned this, and you could see, I mean, a visceral reaction to the point of saying that's not going to happen. Forget equality. Equality is not what anybody wants. They want their land back. Well, they're not going to get their land back. You know, Native Americans aren't going to get New York. The Spanish aren't going to get Texas. Nobody's getting anything back. If people have control, they're going to hold control. But there is another side to this, and that is the way that we dealt with Japan and the way we dealt with Germany. But the difference is that Japan and Germany were willing to take the support. They had been defeated, and they said, look, we've lost, and if you're going to give us stuff, turn it over, because we're beat. And so that was that. But the Palestinians, although they've been beat down tremendously over and over, they don't want to quit, because they think they're going to get a better deal on some other planet or in some other life or wherever. I don't know. But somebody has to help them to understand that that's not going to happen. It's not coming there. The only life that can be better is right over there in Palestine, and it could be better immediately if they stop shooting, if Israel stops shooting, and if the United Nations, the United States, whatever other countries are necessary to come in to preserve and protect everybody's peace over there, that's the solution. Now, how to get there is not simple. And Joe Biden would like to do this. He would like to do it before the next election, because if he could, there is no doubt that it would bring immense benefits to him and to the Democratic Party against Donald Trump. But wow, there are a whole bunch of pieces in this. It's not simple. So I've just given you a good look at a lot of the pieces, a lot of the discussions that have gone on, a lot of the things that Israel did that they should not have done, because it opened the door to Hamas doing this on October 7th. But all said and done, they're going to have to sit down and figure out how to live together, or this is just going to keep on happening. And even if they manage a ceasefire without any kind of a plan for a Palestinian state, all they're going to have is the same thing that they've had since 1948, and that is a holding pattern awaiting the next attack that will come from Palestine. And believe me, it'll keep coming. You're not going to end this until you give the Palestinians something that they can work toward and something that will stop them from thinking about how they want to kill Israelis. It's that simple. Okay. Simple, simple, simple. I'll tell you what's simple. It's simple to figure out what you're going to do if you're going out to dinner tonight, because you're going to go and find, and it's not hard to find, Wendy's, right down Chesterfield Airport Road. It's 18,000 Chesterfield Airport Road. And I promise you, the food is fabulous. We say it every night, but we have to. First of all, you have to remember it. Secondly, we want to make sure you get there. And third, if you do, you're going to love your meal because Wendy's is just a great restaurant. Atmosphere, phenomenal. Friends, you got Ben over there, the owner. You can go see him, but you're not going to see him if you don't buy a meal. So make sure that you're going to buy a nice meal. Now, Ben didn't say that. That's just crazy Mark talking. But look, go to Wendy's and enjoy great food. And we're talking about wings. We're talking about smoked meats. We're talking about pizza. Come on. You don't want pizza? You're going to have pizza tonight. Just go straight to Wendy's. You can have my favorite, baby back ribs. You know, baby back ribs, I mean, it's not zero calories, but it is protein and it's healthy. So go for the ribs. And then you can be thinking about those onion rings because I know they're not perfect, but I mean, they're perfect tasting, but they're not protein. It's not going to make you healthy. It's not like some kind of a health shake or something, but it is great food at a great restaurant. And you'll love it. So all you got to do is go to 18,000 Chesterfield Airport Road, and you will love Wendy's. And don't forget, Defiance, Missouri is coming. So don't forget Defiance, Missouri. That's Wendy's in Defiance. Now, if you're looking for jewelry, the place to go is Jewels on Hampton, and that is 4506 Hampton. And that's over in St. Louis, right off of Highway 40. And I can tell you that I owe Al a call because we're supposed to get together this weekend, and I haven't called him yet, but I will. But believe me, Al is a great guy. You'll love him. His son AJ is there too. It's a great family jewelry store. They sell coins and jewelry. They buy and sell. They design jewelry. They will design anything that you want. They'll design things on their own creations, and give you a chance to look at those as well. This is a terrific jewelry store. And if you go through there, you'll be amazed at everything they've got in that store. And then the next thing is, I can tell you, they do repair watches. They're really good at it. They'll make sure that your watch works. And you may have, for example, like I have my gold Seiko watch from 45 years ago. You know, if you've got something like that, you may need it repaired. Jewels on Hampton's the place to go. 4506 Hampton, that's it. Al and AJ. Now, before we go to the weekend, here I am with a somewhat blue tie, but I have to admit, I mean, just looking at it, I can't even tell. Maybe it's turquoise. I don't know. Maybe it's got some green in it. I can't tell. You know, I'm colorblind. But I know that the tie goes with the shirt and with this suit. It's a nice suit. I got so many nice suits. I don't wear them all the time. But I have a great blue suit. And my kids at school are begging me to show up for graduation in my blue suit. So I may do that. But at any rate, it's all at the St. Louis Suit Company in Clayton. They're on the corner of Forsyth and Central. And it's so funny. You should be in my classes where my seniors, they say, "Where do you get those suits, Kaysen, and how much are they?" And I just open up my website and I say, "Look, there it is. You want a suit? Go there." I mean, they better not be getting married yet. They're only 17, 18 years old. But I can tell you that the St. Louis Suit Company takes care of weddings. They're very good at weddings. So check them out. Jay and Nick, you know, all these places have the owners on site because they're great small businesses. And when the owners are there, everything goes right. It's just the best way to do it. The St. Louis Suit Company, they're in Clayton. They've been there for 29 years. And I always say they'll probably be there another 29. Check them out in Clayton, St. Louis Suit Company. Get yourself a brand new suit. But I always say suits and ties and shirts and dress shoes. Just unfortunately, no Chucks. But other than that, they're great. I love my Chucks, but you can't get them there. Someday they might. You know, all this talk about the Chucks, for all I know, Jay may be at this very moment making a deal to get the Chucks in there. But so far, I can't verify that one. Okay, so let's talk about my best friend, Donald J. Trump, headed for a fall like none else. I love it. So how would we know this? Well, we know, for example, that by 60 to 35 in the last poll that I saw, women were supporting Joe Biden, not Trump. And for obvious reasons, I mean, they've read the reports and the stories all over the country about women bleeding out with miscarriages because doctors wouldn't take care of them out of fear that somebody would accuse them of performing an abortion. And, you know, worse stories than that. People, they're dying of sepsis, and women are suffering. They really are. And Donald Trump is so proud that he's the one that did this. He is proud, but he just doesn't know how to say it in a way that doesn't get him in more and more trouble. So he's in more and more trouble. And how do we know he's in trouble? Well, I'll tell you how. There's a state that we know of very close to us here. It's called Indiana. You could go look on the map and you'll see it right next to Missouri. And here's the deal with Indiana. Very conservative, just like Missouri. So the problem is, in Indiana, they've got some trouble. They had an election the other day, and it was a primary. And there was nobody running but Donald Trump. That was it. Everybody else dropped out. Just one person in the election, Donald. So I guess he got 100% of the vote, huh? Well, not exactly. In fact, he got 78% of the vote because Nikki Haley, who has dropped out of this election months ago, got 20% of the vote. And when they did the polling on these people as they come out of the election, these people said, I won't vote for Donald Trump under any circumstances. Big numbers. 20% of the electorate on the Republican side in an all-red Indiana came out and said, look, we voted 20% for Nikki Haley, and we are not going to vote for Donald Trump. We don't care who's running. Now, this is not just Indiana. This has happened in other places as well. It happened in New Hampshire. It happened in North Carolina. And the bottom line is that there is a good 20% of the Republican electorate that's saying, we don't want this guy. He's crazy. He's a psychopath. He's not our guy. We want the Republican Party, not this lunacy. So Donald's got trouble. And if you think he's got trouble, which he does, go look on Google this weekend and listen to some of the stories that came out of this trial. And I think it's really interesting. And I mentioned this yesterday, and I said that there were many people who don't even know about what's happening at the trial in Manhattan. and they don't know any of the details about what's happened in the developments down at Mar-a-Lago. And the reason they don't know is because they're so busy watching Fox. F-O-X. Yeah, F-O-X is telling them that the weather's nice, have a great weekend. Joe Biden is the head of a crime family. His son is passing out naked pictures. I mean, this is what they're talking about. You know, the laptop, all that craziness. That's all they've got to say, because they're not telling people about what's happening in the trial in Manhattan, which is going so horribly. And I mean, it couldn't be worse. There is only one way that Donald Trump is going to get out of Manhattan without a prison sentence, and that's if one juror stands up and says, you know, I'm sure this all happened, but I'm not 100% sure. I'm only 99.8% sure, so therefore, I'm going to hang the jury. Now, that's one possibility. Another possibility is that one person, if they were even thinking such a thing, wouldn't do it, because there is going to be peer pressure that comes off of that jury when they get in that room and they start talking about what they saw. It's all going to go to guilty. That's what it's going to do. And it's very likely that 12 of those jurors are going to say, this man's guilty. He did it. And I've said repeatedly what he's done, and everybody should know what he's done. I shouldn't have to tell you, but I was talking with some of my friends on the right today on Facebook, and they were explaining to me all the stories about why Donald is the greatest man on the planet. But at any rate, he's obviously got problems. He knows he does. And everybody that's in the courtroom has looked at him and said, this man looks like he knows that he's in serious trouble. Now, you know, how do you tell when somebody looks a certain way? Obviously, you can't. But one thing for sure, we can look at what's been said at the trial. We can look to see how it's developing day by day as they get to the documents. And then they've gone through the documents, and here comes Monday. And as we get to the end of the trial, and listen to what I just said, we are coming up to the end of this trial. It's almost over. The trial started weeks ago, and here we are. They said 2 weeks ago that we probably had 2 weeks. Now we may have 1 week, maybe a week and a half. Then they have to get in the jury room. Then they have to sentence this guy. Believe me, they're going to sentence him. But I'll say this. We're almost there. So when people say, oh, you'll see, Donald will be great 9 months from now. But that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about 2 weeks. In 2 weeks, we're going to know where Donald Trump stands in Manhattan. Now, one other thing that I think is happening is possibly, and this I haven't heard anywhere, but this is just me guessing, and that is that Jack Smith is going to do something at Mar-a-Lago. He can't allow this to go on. He knows where it's headed. Aileen Cannon has told everybody that the date for this trial is now postponed indefinitely. That means forever, really, because they're really hoping that if they can put it off long enough, that Donald can get elected and then he can get himself out of this. That's what Aileen Cannon wants. But that's not what a judge is supposed to do. And so clearly Jack Smith is going to have to do something. Or if he doesn't, if he just sits here, I mean, he's just going to allow Aileen Cannon to wipe out this case. And I don't believe that's going to happen. I believe that Jack Smith has a plan, and I think he's working it very cautiously. And I think that one day we're going to wake up and we're going to find out this is what Jack Smith had planned, whatever it is. And it will create enormous problems for Aileen Cannon because she can't keep doing this. And already, as I mentioned yesterday and before, already Jack Smith has appealed to the 11th Circuit twice. And in both cases, the 11th Circuit said, Cannon, you can't do this. And they really, they wiped her out. But not all the way, but enough so that whatever she did was reversed. And again, I'm no lawyer in all of this. I'm just telling you what I'm hearing from all the sources. But then I'm telling you that I'm guessing. It's just a guess. But I'm guessing, it's probably a very good guess, that Jack Smith's got a plan, and he's going to drop it on the world, and he's going to come after Aileen Cannon very aggressively. And he's going to take his best shot at trying to pull this case out of her grasp and then move it somewhere where somebody can come in and fairly, honestly handle this case as a judge. Because 11 months in, and yesterday was the 11th month, 11 months in, we still don't even have a trial date. And in fact, we've got this indefinite postponement. That is horrible. That's not responsible behavior on the part of the judge. It's just not. It's 100% wrong. And by the way, speaking of wrong behavior, here's another accusation that's being thrown around. And I'll tell you, there are just so many. But that's okay. People can defend themselves. In this case, Judge Engoron, who's the civil judge in the state of New York case where Donald Trump ended up having to pay $500 million, that judge is now being accused of having an ex parte discussion with another attorney, which they're not allowed to do. That's a secret conversation where things are being discussed about the case that shouldn't be. And at any rate, they're saying that he did it. And so there's an investigation that's been begun. And so they're going to look in to see what Judge Engoron did. Engoron says, I talked to this guy, some guy named Bailey. He says, I talked to Bailey, and it's true that Bailey said a few things to me. He says, but there was nothing said here that compromised the case. And anyway, there was no misbehavior on either one of our parts. And go ahead, investigate it, because I haven't done anything wrong. So go right ahead. But listen, Donald has to do everything he can because it's all coming at him from every direction. So anything he can figure out that might save him just a little tiny bit, Donald has to do. That's just it. So with about 1 minute left, let me also say, I had commented about a week or two ago about some problems I thought might be developing in the stock market. Stock market didn't do anything crazy today, but I think it's getting close to some trouble. So that's one part of this. And then also, interest rates have climbed up just a little bit in the last, say, 2 weeks. Then there was a little pullback, and I think maybe they're getting ready to come back up again a little more, and that's going to scare the heck out of everybody. So, you know, hang on from an economic standpoint. Whatever it is, if it goes wrong, they'll all blame Joe Biden, and he has nothing to do with any of it. But that's all right. You know, do what you want. In the meantime, I'm going to do what I want. I'm going to get out of here thinking about Wendy's and Jules on Hampton and St. Louis Suit Company. This is Showdown. I'm Mark Kaysen. Good night.